do DOT first. They relate to...
What you gonna do, Craig?
DOT.
Okay.
Because they were way lax last year.
If we do the opening, in just in case, then we can play it.
Yeah, we can go ahead with that. You guys ready? All right. Good morning, everyone. This is the November 8, 2019 meeting of the Board of Land and Natural Resources. Thank you for being here. The first thing we're gonna do is read our standard contested case statement by our great contested case statement reader, Board Member Vaughn.
Thank you, Chair. On some of the matters before the board, a person may wish to request a contested case hearing. And if such a request is made before the board's decision, then the board will consider the request first before considering the merits of the item before it. A person who wants a contested case may also wait until the board decides the issue, then request a contested case after the decision. It's up to you. Any request must be made orally by the end of the meeting and followed up in writing within 10 days. And if no request for a contested case is made, the board will make a decision. The department will treat the decision as final and proceed accordingly.
Thank you very much. We have no minutes to approve today, so I'm going to start with M1 through 12 and M17. If you're ready. You had the booby prize last time, so. Okay, let's just... why don't we just see on M1 through 12 if anybody has any questions.
Chair, I didn't have any questions on those items.
Okay. Anybody else? Is there any public testimony on M1 through 12? If not, is there a motion to approve M1 through 12?
So moved.
I'll second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Wait, now you have M17.
Yes, 17, sorry.
And it just was out of order.
I have lots of
questions
on M17.
Any public testimony on M17? If not, is there a motion to approve?
So moved.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. And then I think...
Harbors.
No, I think I'm going to do Harbors next. Yeah. M13, 14, 15, 16. Again, let's just see if anybody has any questions on any of these. 13, 14, 15, 16.
I have no questions.
Okay, no questions. Any public testimony on M13, 14, 15, 16? If not, is there a motion to approve?
So moved.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Jackpot.
Thank you.
Jackpot.
Have a great long weekend.
You guys got my demo, my email, right? Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Next, we are going to hear F1. F1.
Oh, yeah. Sorry about that. Aloha, Chair, members of the new, members of the board, new members. Item F1 is a request for authorization for a conservation and management permit for Papa Namakwekea, the co-trustees. This
and
comes.
You are?
Oh, sorry. Maria Carnevale, States Manager for Papa Namakwekea. And this permit comes before you each year at either the November or December meeting. It is an omnibus for all the agencies to conduct our regular activities as documented. So open for any questions.
Okay. Board members, any questions? No questions. Any public testimony on this? Now, is there a motion to approve F1?
So moved.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, L1.
Chair, members, and new members. Cardi Chang, Chief Engineer. For item L1, no changes.
Okay, any questions?
No question.
Any public testimony? If not, is there a motion to approve L1?
Move to approve.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good luck to that.
Okay, next up is...
D8. Russell Tsuji for Land Division. D8 is a request from the applicant, our lessee, Kua, Bani, and Christian Academy for two things. Amendment of the general lease to change the rent to the prevailing minimum rent of the board. And number two, consent to assign it the lease to Kona Vocational Life and Education Center. And I have my big island manager is here. If you have any questions, applicants are also here.
Okay, questions, board members? I guess I just make a comment that looks to me like this is, you know, we're paying attention to what public purpose is carried out by the nonprofit, and this looks like a good public purpose to me. Okay, any public testimony? Anything? If not, is there a motion to approve?
Move to approve.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Okay, next up is D4.
D4, staff is recommending cancellation of the current revocable permit to Kimi Hotels and issuance of a new one, permit. Secondly, authorization for sale and public auction.
Okay, question, board members.
For this, there was a seaside there before.
Yeah.
So you know, going to public auction, would the other hotels around there be able to go to the auction and
pay for it? It's kind of far away from the other hotels.
Because a lot of the hotels over there are always looking for parking.
Okay, any other questions? We'll have the testimony on this one.
I'm a chairman, members of the board. When I'm on the phone for Kimi Hotels Inc., I'm here with Alan Kimi, chairman of Kimi Hotels Inc. We're just here if you have any questions for the applicant.
Okay, thank you very much.
My usual question is if you're okay with the staff recommendation.
Okay, is there a motion to approve?
Motion to approve.
Second.
All in favor?
Madam Chairman.
Yes.
I'd like to note for the record that I'm recusing myself. Because I'm friends with the applicant.
Okay. All right. All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
With one refusal. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Okay. C1. 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 Are you doing C1?
Yeah. Dave was.
Okay, we'll come back. We'll come right back to this one. D13.
Okay, this D13 is a issuance of requesting for issuance of two non-exclusive easements for Hawaiian Electric and Hawaiian Telecom for utility. I don't have anything to add on this.
Okay, any questions? Any public testimony? Applicant? Okay, if not, is there a motion to approve as submitted?
Move to approve. Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay, D14.
this item, we're requesting the easement be granted for some encroachments. In this particular instance, the new purchasers came in and talked to our staff, and that's when we discovered the encroachments on the property. There's a pier, there's a house which partially encroaches, and then a rock wall. So they're asking for easement for the encroachments to legitimize those easement encroachments, as well as for landscaping purposes, so it will be on reclaimed lands purposes. Applicants, I believe, are here.
Okay, questions? Any questions? Applicant want to add anything? Any public testimony? If not, is there a motion to approve D14?
So moved.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Stayed here yet? No. D7.
This one we're bringing back to the board and asking the board for. We previously had informed the board that there was a reverter provision that we thought it kicked in and that it automatically reverted back to the original grantor because we weren't using the property for the restricted use of it. It was a library, I believe. Since then, the owners have been trying to get title insurance and the title company is a little nervous, so they've asked that we, if it was a chair, would sign off on a confirmation of a reversion just to clean the record up. We looked at it, we didn't think it was a big problem, so we're recommending.
Good morning, I'm Bill Burns. I'm the attorney for the Bond Library Community Group. I'm here to answer any questions.
And you're okay with the staff recommendation in this matter?
Yes, I am.
This is a really interesting one. I've enjoyed reading about this mm-hmm. one.
Yeah. Piece of history.
Yeah, piece of history.
It is.
And the effectiveness of a reverter, you know?
I also have, if it would be helpful for the board, I have other materials on the library, including the article that listed as one of the most endangered historic buildings in the islands.
Hmm.
So,
I hope it's going to be kept in some community purpose.
It's going to be a heritage center for North Kohala.
Excellent. Perfect.
Yeah, so that's the intent. And my client is the group that will be, it will go back to the Bond family, we'll own it, mm-hmm. but my client's going to execute a long-term lease and then we'll operate the heritage house.
Great.
Good, okay, any public testimony on this? If not, is there a motion to approve D7?
So moved.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Dave's back. Okay, C1.
Morning, Chair and Board. David Smith, Administrator, Division of Forestry and Wildlife. C1 is a request approval of the Kapu'aula Koa Forest Management Plan and the Forest Stewardship Agreement with Paniolo Tonewoods, and requesting approval and acceptance of the FONSI for the project. So this is a forest stewardship project, 543 acres, reforesting pasture land into koa for a working koa forest, producing high quality koa lumber, and also a mixed species native forest. So really interesting project, and really highly supportive. We've been trying to get something like this going for a long time. Paniolo Tonewoods is a terrific partner. It's a 50-50 cost share that would include, if a timber component comes in and there'll be a payback rate of 50% of the initial investment, which is typical of the agreements we've made in the past. Plans to convert pasture and forest, overall beneficial impacts, using best management practices, known archaeological resources, net positive economic benefit for the public, no known health concerns, not anticipated to have any cumulative adverse effects. So the recommendation is approve the forest stewardship plan, approve the cost share, authorize the chair to amend and finalize, execute a final forest stewardship agreement, and approve and accept the final EA. And I think, so we got folks here if you got any questions, both for solutions and Pineal Atonements, and Tanya with our forest stewardship program.
Okay, questions?
I'd like to hear from the applicant if there's no questions for Dave, and I'll have questions for Dave later.
Okay. Yeah. I got a question for you.
Yep.
How would the growing core over there, there's a soil and the ground?
It's previously a really high quality koa forest, so it's a perfect place to grow koa.
Yeah, because it just was one of the it's on shoreline property. Unless I get the wrong one, but thinking about the wrong one.
This was, this was Parker Ranch land.
Yeah.
And it was previously koa forest, koa ohia forest, and then it was converted to pasture in the past and has been used for pasture purposes, but now, the fact that it was previously a really high quality koa forest makes us think it can be again as well.
Okay.
Not so much about this project, but do we ever get reimbursed have any of the forest stewardship agreements culminated in harvests that would call for reimbursement?
I don't know,
I don't believe so. We don't have many actual timber projects. Mm-hmm. So this is one of the kinds of projects we want to encourage, but we haven't, we're hoping this is a demonstration project.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So as a follow-up question to that, how did you define the volume of commercial timber harvest monthly, I think it was, for $1,000 gross? How did you come up with that?
That's just the, that's what's in the forest stewardship guidelines.
Okay.
Can you state your name for the record, please?
I'm Tanya Rubenstein. I'm with the Division of Forestry and Wildlife, Cooperative Forester.
Okay, other questions for Dave? Okay, so come up. And
good morning, Madam Chair, members of the Commission. Thank you for the opportunity to address you. We're simply here to thank you for the opportunity to apply for this program. It's a great program, and our intention, as stated, is to manage this as a commercial forest to grow koa trees to make guitars. Our partnership, Pineal Atonements, is a partnership of Taylor Guitars and Pacific Rim Tonewoods, and this property is purchased specifically for growing koa after an evaluation of a number of properties. Nick Koch, our forester with Forest Solutions, had looked at this property 10 years previously as a great place to grow trees. Deep, deep soils, well irrigated. We feel we're going to have a great growing potential there and a demonstration of how to grow trees commercially, but also integrate that with native Hawaiian vegetation and hopefully restore some of the qualities of the native forest that was there. We're really happy to be here. Thank you.
I should say I had the opportunity to meet with these folks. Good to see you. And see the Taylor Guitar plant in San Diego some years back. And so I'm really excited to see the progress on this.
Mm-hmm. I should add that while not included in this project, though mentioned, is we have put in a 3,000-foot road and a graded out a 7-acre mill site, and we'll be installing a sawmill there later this year, permits in process for the buildings. And so we'll be bringing some infrastructure for forestry back to the island, and we're really excited about that aspect as well.
Is the sawmill location near a gully or a gulch or anything that any of the runoff, if there's runoff, it'll go down to the gulch, go to the ocean?
No, we're actually about, I think, 6 miles from the ocean. There's no running water on this property. It's shown in the blue line maps, and we've gone through the whole permitting process with the County of Hawaii for the grading and the site preparation.
One question I have is, or others, but what would be a retail value, did you think? Because the coal would be harvested, 30 years from now?
Right, 30
And then every 15, a revisit again,
right.
And so forth,
yes.
Right?
Yes.
So what would be an estimated value of retail value of the coal?
Well, it's a really hard question because we're kind of the high end. It's as Mr. Koch has often said, we're the filet mignon kind of part of the wood, but you get the whole rest of the cow there. So the value of a piece of coa looks very valuable, but when you put it in the context of all the wood that comes off, it's hard to say what that number is going to be, because right now the market is very imperfect, and it's kind of a spot market for high quality wood, but there's no market for all the other wood. Our intention having the mill is to make other qualities of wood available to other users here on the island, on the islands. And so I'd be irresponsible to state a number. Right now people pay, you know, on the stump in the forest, $8, $12, $15, $20 a board foot. You go to the, if you can find a piece of wood that's really beautiful and quality for a guitar top, maybe they pay $150 a board foot. But there's a lot of wood left in the woods that has no value. And so we're trying to create a larger value spectrum for the wood that's available.
I think the balance, as you said, the bones from the cow, there is a value.
Right. But you have to have a market for it right now.
I'm sure there, I mean, with people reaching out for core implements or bowls or, you know, not necessarily guitar tops, but
right,
as a furniture or things of that nature.
We want to be their supplier.
Yeah.
If I may, Nick Koch, Forest Solutions. For the financial analysis here, we used anywhere from $4 to $18 a board foot as final harvest. And that goes from small materials to veneer quality, large logs per board foot. That's stumpage that's in the field. So that's a fancy question.
Okay, any other questions?
Yeah. I do, but that'll be
great. Why are you establishing a mill so far in advance of your harvest?
Because we also have currently some contracts with Kamehameha Schools for wood.
Uh-huh.
And working with Nick, who's also president of Hawaiian Island, or the Forest Industries Association, there's a great demand for wood. And uh-huh, by having a mill here, right now we're having to take those logs and send them back over the water and mill them in Washington. Uh-huh. And it's not cost effective to bring the residual material back. This way we feel we're being more responsible and responsive to the community's needs.
Uh-huh.
And initially it will be a small mill, and then about 3 or 4 years later we're hoping to have a much more sophisticated operation there.
Okay.
Sam? I have a question. So this is, you know, entering into a sustainable forest management system from pasture. Seems to me that there's potential for carbon sequestration and, mm-hmm, and carbon banking and the like. And that's a movement that's growing in Hawaii. Have you guys considered being part of that?
Well, we've had some discussions when Jody Kalakapui was at TNC. We had discussions with her, just met with her a couple of months ago. It's an opportunity we want to pursue, but it's not. It doesn't drive any of the financial aspects of this project. Mm-hmm. It would be an add-on, not mm-hmm, not an essential to make the project work.
Certainly, that's true. But it's just an opportunity that could be added.
Absolutely.
And it certainly will sequester carbon independently of whether that's
right,
monetized
yeah,
or not.
That's right.
That's great.
That's great.
So might as well take advantage of the financial benefits that come with that.
It's a scale problem. We're small compared
right, to the, at least at the start.
Right. Yeah.
But it's good to hear that you've been talking with Jody and continuing with, say, Mark Fox and others that are working with that particular issue. And as you expand, then the potential benefits will be great.
Yes.
Super. Okay, thank you. Any public testimony on this? Yes.
Hey, James, I haven't seen you in a while.
Yeah.
My wife. But she's getting better, hopefully. You know, my only concern is that, wow, we're talking about coal.
Sorry, James K. Monaku, senior.
Yes, ma'am. I'm
proud.
Sorry. Yes.
Great-grandparent.
Yes, yes. And in fact, I'm one more than Norman, so what a blessing. You know, for me, it's a bigger blessing.
One more Norman.
Yeah.
Awesome.
And maybe January.
He's a warrior.
Well, no, my children are. I just had 5 children, and the blessings just came from them. What a wonderful thing. But, you know, let's get back to the core. You know, I hear things about core. You know, right now, coal is really expensive. And as time goes on, I'm not sure, we all know that it goes up, it then comes down. And as an example, for your log on the Big Island, it costs $15,000 to $25,000. And it's just the tree trunk itself without scraping anything off. That's how they put it in the house. And so, my only concern is that I hope we can afford it, you know, our children and my grandchildren, great-grandchildren, because it's getting scary. Things are getting, you know, no offense, but I'm beginning to feel like we're not the state of Hawaii anymore. You know, we're going in a different direction. So anyway, I just wanted to let you know my concerns. Thank you very much.
We share them. Hey, Mana.
Thank you, Chair. Leimana Damatiu Ahamoku. I just had a suggestion, listening to the gentleman talk about, and listening to Sam talk about the possibilities of helping the people of Waimea in the future. So I would just wanted to offer a quick suggestion that perhaps they would be interested in helping the kids in Honoka'a High School that have a strong woodworking program. And if local kids could learn how to work with koa from a, I don't want to say industrial point of view, but at least from a perspective that they have not ever looked at, it might be beneficial to them, to at least see a different side of koa and how it can benefit communities in more than one way. That was all.
Very nice.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, any other public testimony? Yeah.
Bob and Fuda, First Deputy DLNR. I just wanted to make sure that all of our board members are aware that in our department's advancement of reforestation efforts and koa native Hawaiian wood work, that both Mr. Rose and Mr. Koch have been active partners with Kamehameha Schools and the department for a number of years. I personally have explored this whole area where they're doing the foresting. And so it's all part of a major department effort for reforestation. Just wanted to add that.
Thank you. Any other public testimony? Not. Is there a motion to approve?
I'd like to ask staff.
Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, you had a question.
Yeah. So I know there's a template for the payback to the state as far as the payback funds, but we're going to front $749,000, and when we're fronting $749,000, their 50% payback is due in 30 years from now.
It'd be due
yes, upon their first harvest.
Upon their first harvest.
Yeah.
And you put this money out in the beginning of the project?
No, it's a 10-year contract. So every year of the contract, it's a 50-50 cost share with the applicant.
So why does the state only get 50% back and not the full amount?
That's our guidelines actually call for a negotiated rate, and it's in the guidelines it's 5 to 10%. It's actually less than that, and we've negotiated the 50% payback rate. That's something we can explore. This is really our only timber project right now. And so it is a negotiable rate, but generally, you know, this is what we've done in the past, that we haven't, you know, collected on it. So that's something, you know, we can explore.
I would like that, only because I think there's a huge investment as far as the value of that core and the resource it has, and I would think that the state, for me, I'm speaking, should have 100% reimbursement. They stand, or the applicant or the lessee, this project will stand to make a hell of a lot more money than what the outlay of this is, but I'm just curious.
Yeah, I mean, I think we look at it also as far as the environmental benefits, you know, the value of that over the long period as well, which is kind of an intangible amount, but we also see that as a contribution to the state. So that's, I think, why we don't request the full 100%, because over the period of the 30 years and the forests coming back and the carbon and the wildlife habitat, that's also part of the value.
I agree with you, but I also disagree in another sense, that if it's no management practices, and the under storage of the under those trees that creates a lot of fuel, and we have a fire of that nature, and it wipes out that whole forest. You know, I mean, I'm not saying it's going to happen, but just the possibility. I understand the pros and the cons.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I think we can, you know, we can look into higher rates. That's, you know, kind of our recommendation right now for this particular project, which is our typical. So if that's something
okay.
you want to
appreciate it.
Pursue.
Thank you.
Is there any federal funding committed to this?
No, no, there's not.
I have a question related to the returns to the state. Is there any agreement related to the mill and its activity and items that are being processed through there, or is it only the wood that's being developed from this?
Yeah, the mill is not part of the stewardship agreement. That's entirely separate.
The lack of infrastructure has been a problem in terms of trying to develop, you know, timber industry over here. We have subsidized in the past other efforts to try to support the timber industry. We have currently running a solar dryer, a lumber dryer on Maui at our base yard, and that thing is full all the time. It just constantly, you know, there's a real demand for it. And so I think that milling demand could be quite high. We could utilize a lot of wood that isn't currently utilized. There's a lot of wood even from urban sources, big trees that come down adjacent roads and things like that, or hazard trees. And now on Oahu, they used to take that out to greenways and grind them up. Now, you know, guys are lining up to compete for them right on the job site. So there's a lot of latent interest and need for these types of facilities. I think could be a real help in trying to develop utilizing local woods.
You know, in Waikoloa, above Waikoloa Village,
mm-hmm.
they have a huge inventory of looks like eucalyptus logs, and I think that was a market that they had and they lost. Was any of that eucalyptus grown on state land, or that was all private land, which now just sits remnant in that area?
Most of it's chaos. We do have some small percentage of the eucalyptus lands. A lot of it's Kamehameha Schools lands. But that's a good example. They're shipping those to China as whole logs. You know.
Not anymore, though. It looks like just sitting there.
Yeah, that contract fell through.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it just hasn't been commercially viable, although there's a lot of interest in eucalyptus right now. We have the Wood Utilization Task Force that's looking at utilizing eucalyptus for ADUs and potentially some low-cost homeless-type housing. And so we're trying to figure out programs to utilize local wood. And this is an effort along those lines with a really good partner to try to do that. So we are subsidizing it to some some effect, because we see that there's value to the local community as well. Like Leimano was talking about, there's potential educational value. There's local value to the community in terms of jobs, potentially, and there's also environmental benefits.
So, like you said, if I heard you correctly, the state funding would not go into the mill then?
No.
The mill is their own cost.
Right. Yeah, the state funding is
they mentioned that they're putting up the mill to do work for Kamehameha Schools, yeah, so I just sort of worried that they're taking, they're subsidizing themselves with other.
Yeah, the state funding is to implement the stewardship management plan, which doesn't include the mill.
Okay.
Okay, other questions?
But the mill is on state lands?
No, the mill is on private
lands. Okay. Okay.
That was an important clarification.
Yeah.
Is there any other questions? I think the proper thing to do is to move to accept the environmental assessment first, and then we'll go on to the management plan and forest stewardship agreement. So I move to accept the environmental assessment.
I second that. I thought it was greatly well done. I like reading it.
I agree.
The history.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
And I would then move to approve the management plan and the forest stewardship agreement. I'm okay with the 50%. There's a fair amount of risk and involved in this. Anytime you're going to grow something over a long term, it's not. There's a lot more to it than putting seeds in the ground and watching things grow. So, and we funded a lot of these without any potential of any kind of payback for the state. So. I'm very happy to see this project. It looks extremely well thought out and a very exciting project to have a high-end use for a wood that we're trying to reestablish in this kind of situation. So it may turn out to be an inspiration to other people. There have been, you know, all these projections. You can find economic projections of growing koa that make it like this is the best investment you could ever make, and not too many people actually are doing it. So we'll see. Here's somebody that's willing, and if this here's a state program that is actually tailor-made to help kickstart this kind of thing along.
Yeah, I seen a koa forest, remnant koa forest, that was very live and active in the day at McKenna's Ranch. Mm. And I was there 2 weeks ago, mm-hmm. and I seen areas that they stopped harvesting a decade ago or so, even more. But they fenced off an area about 6,000 foot elevation. They fenced off maybe a couple of acres. You should see all the volunteer koa that's growing in.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Choke. Mm-hmm. And so many other remnant koas, huge koas, mm-hmm. that's still growing. Some that fell, mm-hmm. and I was asking Keith Unger, I said, why don't you get back into this? He says, well, I told my son Max if he wants to go and harvest corn, he says, he's not interested.
Oh.
I said, wow, mm-hmm. such a value.
Well, Max isn't interested, but hopefully others will be. Did you make that motion? Did you make a motion? Did we second it?
Did I not make a motion? I think I made a motion. Yeah. Yeah. So I don't know if somebody
seconded to approve the EIS.
To approve the, no, the to, well, we passed the EA, yeah. And so then I made a motion to approve the stewardship plan.
Okay. Is there a second to that one?
Second.
Okay.
Okay. Any other discussion?
See that you launched into discussion.
Yeah. See, I screwed everything up.
All in favor?
Well, hey, we didn't finish discussion.
Any other discussion?
Yeah.
Sam, would you like to make any further comments?
I concur with the idea that a project like this, not only with the potential economic benefits of koa, but for the restoration of the forest that goes underneath the koa, that's almost as important to me as the product itself. Not only that, but the opportunity to work with the community in the Kohala area, as was mentioned, I think it's great to have students and community members involved in the restoration of the vegetation there. I've seen the power of that in Awaki with Art Medeiros's Mesic Forests restoration projects. People really get into it, and then pretty soon you have this movement of restoration of vegetation that used to be, and a reconnection of the people to the diverse resources that existed in that region.
Any further comments? Okay, all in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you very much. Okay, who's here from off-island? Okay, who's here from off-island besides for D9, C2, and C3? C4?
Off-island.
Right, I got yours. Yeah. Okay, let's do C4. Oh, that's progress briefing, sorry. Okay, let's go ahead with D9.
D9 is a Maui Wind Farms. They're coming in for a request to refinance their mortgage and asking for an estoppel certificate. At the time this submittal was due, which is probably mid-October, at least mid-October, to myself and to the chair, there was an outstanding percentage rent as far as our records was concerned. We submitted the submittal, it was booked in, and it was sent to the board members. We followed up real closely with our with council and the wind farm operators, and we determined that they had sent a percentage rent check back in January, which we never got, and it was never deposited. And so they canceled that check in October and reissued a check, and we looks like it was sent directly to our fiscal office. And so it was deposited by our fiscal office on October 28th. By that time, the agenda had already been set, and we're already, the submittal was already been done and finalized. So we, and then we also received the percentage rent report in November, earlier, just this week. So as far as right now, the account is current, and in fact, a little paid ahead for half the year. And that was paid ahead because earlier, several years ago, they had doubled up on our payment. So currently, the account is 100%. They're asking to mortgage $130 million or so, and from what I understand, it's a refi for lower cost of capital. So that's, and asking together with that in a stop with certificate.
Okay, questions?
Didn't you have an amendment to this? We talked on the phone about it.
Yeah, amendment. I was going to delete the recommendation 1A because just background. Usually, almost 99% of mortgages that we do for consents are tied with an extension of a lease. And extension, when you ask for an extension of a lease term, there is a requirement that the money be put back into the business or for improvements. Here, I mean, it's going back into the business, it's a refi, but it is a refi, critical cost of capital. So we're deleting the requirement that going back into the improvements. I did talk to council because my understanding is 20 years is basically the life of the turbines, and if they're going to run, and they're already 10 years in. So if they're going to run again, they usually requires a heavy investment after the first 20 years, I think, at least, but that's what I've been told. Yeah. So they're aware of that. This is just pure refi, as far as I understand. My staff on Maui, we've had discussions of how to better keep track of these rent reports. And I've also talked to council, and because if the rent report, unless it gets to the land division staff as compared to going to our accounting staff, we are not aware, number one, the percentage rent came in, and number two, to double check the accuracy of the payment and the calculation. So, Pat and I has been talking about that as well as my Maui staff, so we're going to try and do better next time.
Okay. That's good. That's good to hear.
Other questions?
This is kind of off point, but I just noticed that the term of the lease, it says option to extend lease with right of first refusal for an additional 20 years. I don't really understand that. I mean, when you have a right of first refusal, that it implies a competitor to me. You know what I'm saying?
It's an option to extend.
Yeah, if you have an option to extend, who's the... You have an option to extend. You know what I'm saying?
I don't understand. But yeah. This was one of those leases that had some heavy negotiations going on at the time. And there may have been reasons why. I don't recollect what right the, now. This is, right. This is the Wind Farm 2. I was not too involved in Wind Farm 2. I was involved in Wind Farm 1, which was in 2005. Okay. 4 or 5.
Just a side question. All right.
Sorry.
Okay.
There's some unusual provisions in this lease.
Okay, any other questions? Any public testimony on this? Did you want to add anything? If not,
I'd like to ask that.
Oh, okay, fine. Come on up. If you would.
Good morning. My name is Patricia McHenry on behalf of Kahiawa Wind Farm 2.
Question I have is, it's not it's pertaining not to this right here, but how did the fire fare with you? Do you have any damage to those turbines when it came over, the fire?
I can speak to that, if I may.
His name is Miguel Rosales. Yeah, go ahead. Sure. Introduce yourself, please.
Miguel Rosales, Regional Operations Manager for TerraForm. Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the board. The recent fire did have some damage to our equipment on site. Not specifically to the turbines operating, but it did damage one spare blade set that we had, leaving us without any blade spares in case we have a blade failure. That would be problematic. And it did also ingest some smoke into our BESS building, battery energy storage system, which has a fire suppression system, alarm system attached to, and it did deploy the primary tanks for the fire suppression. So that it's going to incur some cost in refilling those tanks, and it already incurs some cost in cleaning up efforts, removing some of that soot that was ingested as well as the residue from the tanks.
Is there any future plans to do a fire break of some sort and get approval from the state to do something of that nature?
Yes, we started talking about techniques and working with other experts to see how we can better prepare for arresting a fire before it gets up to impact the wind farm.
That wind really kills it. I mean, it takes off.
Completely agree.
That's a second fire.
I think we've had a couple more, not without any consequence to the wind farm, right, but came pretty close to you. You're right.
That's all. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, madam.
Thank you. Okay, any public testimony on this? Not. Is there a motion to approve as amended to delete 1A?
So second.
To delete A. Okay, any further discussion? Not. All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Thank you. Russell, C, 2 and 3 are related. Should we just like... Let's go ahead and do C. C2 and 3.
C2 and 3, David Smith, Administrator for Forest Green Wildlife. C2, these are connected. So C2 is a request for approval of the supplemental environmental impact statement for Kahiawa Wind Power 2 wind energy project on the island of Maui. And C3 is a request for approval of amendments to the incidental take license and habitat conservation plan for the same project. Approval of the impact statement just considers increased Taikeo hoary bat and an increased Taikeo nene. I'd just like to note that we did have an ACP and ITL for the project. They have slightly exceeded it based on not observed take, but calculated take. And so we did need to get a permit to increase it. But the adaptive management plan in the original habitat conservation plan worked because we're exceeding the take, but then they implemented an increased low wind speed curtailment regime, and it brought the take down to zero. So since that was implemented in 2015, we haven't had any other observed take on the project. So even though they had gone and exceeded it based on calculated values, the plan worked as designed, at least to bring the take back down to zero. So there is a little bit extra take. We have another couple of tiers. There's a plan for how to mitigate for that take. Nene, there's not much we can do about Nene in terms of minimization, so we just need to be able to permit and do mitigation. So the mitigation piece is funding forestry and wildlife projects on Maui, existing projects, with Haleak Law Ranch, I believe. So it's just expanding an existing project that they already have. Our people feel that that's manageable and that they can make up for the increased take of Nene based on the operations. So we're comfortable with the Nene take. We're comfortable with where we're at with Hawaiian hoary bat, especially based on the fact that we've been able to bring the take down with the already implemented procedures that have been installed at the site. So we have applicants here if you have any questions. And
okay, questions?
I have a question for the applicant.
Okay.
Hi, I'm Lily Henning, manage environmental affairs for Terraform Power. KWP2.
I'm Yap Adina. I'm with SWCA, environmental consultant for the project.
Very good. I'm glad to hear that the low wind speed curtailment has apparently led to reduction in the bat mortality. And I've also been listening to other projects considering or test utilizing bat deterrent technologies. Are you guys looking into that as well?
Absolutely.
Yep. But you haven't installed any pilot efforts there?
No, and you know, as you know, the wind sites are have some different characteristics throughout the islands, and even on some of the ones on the same island can be very different. So because our take has gone to zero since we implemented the higher low wind speed curtailment, and just a note that we are year-round low wind speed curtailment, so we're not seasonal anymore. So we moved that in December of 2018 to year-round as an additional protective measure, which appears to be working. So to answer your question, I think, you know, where you have a site that has bat take, that's definitely a real live issue. It's a little difficult to evaluate for this site because there has not been bat take.
Has a year-long curtailment, compromised the output of energy?
Well, it reduced it somewhat.
Mm-hmm. Somewhat? Like, what's the percentage?
Miguel just left. He's the operations manager, unfortunately. He didn't want to give you that.
I mean, is it hugely significant, or you're still operating within the projected guidelines or anticipated?
We're meeting the requirements of our PPA with Miguel.
Thanks.
Questions? Other questions? Yeah, Chris.
Can you give me a ballpark idea of the likelihood of finding a bat carcass if one is actually killed by the turbines? There's a formula. And, there's the chance that it'll land in the search area. There's a chance that it'll be found, which is pretty, you're still searching with dogs, right?
Yep.
So that's pretty high. And then there's the chance that a mongoose might make off with it before you go do your search. But what is the ballpark idea of the percentage of the likelihood that you will find the carcass?
80%, right?
It's around 80%.
Well, actually it's higher than that. So there are a number of things that you do to capture some of the concerns that you just talked about. So we do quarterly carcass persistence trials. So that's where you throw out like a surrogate, like a chicken, and you essentially see how long it persists. And so those numbers are added into, like you said, the formula as an input. So if it only persists for 4 days, then that affects what your estimated take is. So even if you haven't observed, a bat or a nene, that will change your estimated and what we report our take numbers to be, even though we don't, see one, because the carcass persistence is, means you may have missed it if it's shorter. So that's one, measure. And then there's also searcher efficiency trials that are not less than quarterly, and those are random, and those are when you essentially test the searcher, in this case the canine and the canine handler, to see how many carcasses they're locating. And those numbers with the canines, as you probably know, are much, much higher than they are with humans. So you go from 60% to above 90%. So we've had above 90% searcher efficiency within the last couple of years with canines. So those are some of the, measures that you take to ensure that any missed carcasses are accounted for in what's called the evidence of absence software that you look at.
Right, so I'm still trying to get a ballpark idea of, if you find one dead one, does that mean that there's likely one more that you didn't find, or is there two more? Just give me a general idea of what that number is.
Yeah, I don't think I can give a general number. There are other factors that also affect the outcome of that model. And right now we're having if you don't find any fatalities, the longer you have zeros during those searches, that affects the total outcome at the end of the model too, because you have a higher confidence that zero is zero, if that makes sense.
Okay.
And to be clear, though, even if we observe zero within these search areas, that's not, we still have to, you know, feed all of this data into the evidence and access software, and you come up with a number more than zero. So you're conservatively, estimating that there are carcasses that you haven't found.
Well, if you found one tomorrow, a bat tomorrow, can you give me a ballpark idea of what that would mean in terms of if you ran it through the formula, there would be an indirect take associated with that that would kick in. Is that 1.7, 1.5?
So maybe put it in these terms. There were 3 observed fatalities within the search plots as of June 2018. And the estimated direct take using the model at the 80% credibility level, that's a standard that we've been given by Fish and Wildlife Service, is 12 bats. So 3 becomes 12 as it currently stands.
Mm-hmm.
Is that helpful?
Does that help?
Well, that helps, but I'm the reason that, and I know those numbers, but there have been changes in the intensity of search. There, you brought in the dogs at a certain point, and so a lot of this stuff has changed over time, and so I don't know that the 3 to 12 is still, like if you got 1 today, that 1 would be 4. That's my question. And if that's too hard a question, I'm sorry, but I'm curious to know.
There are some variabilities, though. So if your searcher efficiency number goes down, say, that 1 doesn't become 4, it could potentially become 4.5 because your searcher efficiency is lower. So unfortunately, it is not a number that you can say it's going to be the same over a whole year. It's going to change based on your searcher efficiency numbers and your carcass persistence numbers. And as long as our carcass persistence numbers remain good, and as long as our searcher efficiency remains high, it's that roughly 1 bat found equals 4 bats reported.
You mean, is that your ballpark now, would you say?
You can't look at it that way, Chris.
You can't give a ballpark.
When I served on the ESRC, we ran through these formulae and all of the factors that are involved in it. And if any one of them changes, it changes the changes the spread and the probability of your estimations.
Yeah.
And so, given the information that they have, they gave you the best number that they could. But it does mean that any one detection does mean a larger number of bats that are likely undetected.
And reported and mitigated for.
Yeah. Right.
So that's the important thing too in terms of our responsibility, is it's not just that, that number's out there. We report that to the agencies, we do quarterly reporting and annual reporting, and we have to mitigate for those numbers.
And it's an estimate ultimately over the life of the permit rather than at a moment in time, because those factors, those temporal factors like the interval in between observed fatalities also affects the outcome of that model.
I have a question. Why do you, explain to me what's the use of a chicken? You put a chicken on it?
Yeah.
So the idea is that if, say, a nene, if a nene is taken, you need to know whether that nene persists or is scavenged, and thus not found by us. So there could be, a nene that was scavenged and we didn't discover. So the purpose of the chickens is to see the carcass persistence of a similar size animal to a nene. So that's where you use the chickens as surrogates.
See, if a cat or a mongoose or something is taking it. Yeah. And so that's why you're not.
Okay, so what kind of chicken would you put out there?
So we get them from a company called Farm and Forages.
If you want to simulate something to a nene, why would you use a guinea hen rather than a chicken? I'm just curious.
Chickens are easier.
I think it comes down to availability.
But they're more domesticated. You know, unless you buy
these are dead. Though.
They're dead.
Put them off dead.
Yeah. Because if a nene hits, it's not going to be alive when it hits the ground, yeah. So it doesn't matter.
I've seen nene above on a very popular pond. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Do you guys do any small mammal predator control in order to try to maximize the persistence?
Yes, we've reinitiated predator control at KWK2.
Okay, using trapping and various other things. Okay.
Other questions? Okay. Any public testimony on this?
Yeah. Boy, Cuba.
James K. Monaco Sr., concerned parent, grandparent, great grandparent, well, what a human. Anyway, did anybody take an accurate count of how many nannies they have in the area? How many bats that they have in the area? Because apparently they're giving them a take license and they don't have an accurate count or at least a general idea of how many of these animals exist in there. Yeah? And so it makes me kind of scared because these are endangered animals, birds, yeah? So I think before we give anybody any kind of, and I'm against giving anybody take a license, the more we're allowing them to kill endangered species. So it's hard for me to accept giving anybody a take license. If they want to get a take license, get an accurate count. Now, I'm not saying these people, but they did well. I mean, before that, they were taking planted seabirds, nannies, and all of this stuff. And now, for a whole year, they haven't gotten any. Yeah, so maybe because there's no more left. So, I'm really against wind farming because it does kill our native birds and everything. So, I'm not sure how we're going to get this, but, and the bats. You know, the only way to destroy a bat is to use sound. If you don't use any, what kind of sound are they using? Is it really really hurting our bats, maybe? Yeah? So how do we stop that? I'm not sure. But I think we need to address all of that. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Other public testimony? Okay, if not.
Well, I just want to point out,
go ahead.
Was there a motion?
Well, I have a couple of amendments which we have included in previous, the board has included in previous, and I'd like to give the applicant a chance to respond. I did send these to Dave Smith yesterday, and the applicant had some, I think possibly had some concerns about them, if they want to share them. But one basically says that if the rate of take exceeds their projected rate of take, DOFA can require the lower wind speed curtailment kick in at a higher speed. I think that is actually inherent in the habitat conservation plan as it stands, but I thought we made that explicit in Napua Makani. And the second condition is that if a deterrent technology becomes commercially available and is shown to be effective and at this site would reduce the take of bats, then DOFA can require the applicant to implement the deterrent technology. And we put that condition in for Napua Makani and for the Awahi wind farm. Now this one, they haven't had any take for the last 4 years, and you can't, reduce something below zero. But if, you know, if they start having a take of bats, and there is a way to minimize this using this, if it turns out that the experiment or the installation being done at Kailua is successful and seems to work, then I think we want to have the requirement that other wind farms put this in as well.
Do you want to make any comments on this?
I understand the concerns that you're addressing with these two paragraphs. I think, as you know, the HCP does have a robust adaptive management set of provisions, and you know, the increase in the low wind speed curtailment that we did, that resulted in, you know, that reduction in take, that's an example of adaptive management. And I think, you know, if we went to, if the board is more comfortable repeating essentially what's in the HCP, you know, that's obviously your prerogative. I guess, you know, our preference is just to have one document, which is the HCP, that, because the danger a little bit is this, where when you address the same thing in two different places, it gets a little confusing potentially.
I accept what you're saying. I think that your project and other projects have changed the low wind speed curtailment, both the cut-in and the seasons, without there being a, based on the adaptive management clauses in the HCP. And I can understand, I don't think that that's, to try to keep the thing simple, I don't think that's necessary, and so I won't be suggesting that. I will be suggesting an amendment on requiring the use of deterrence if it found that it would be effective in reducing take of Opeapea at your site.
Is it okay if I just was wondering if we could tie that condition 5 explicitly to adaptive management? For each of the board members, just so it is consistent with the HCP itself. And again, this is just in the interest of making sure that, you know, the documents that we're operating under are consistent.
So what we're looking at for the board members is number 5 here. I'm not going to, these are the conditions that I was going to propose, and I'm going to not propose what's shown as number 4. These would be special conditions to the incidental take license. So we're looking at number 5, which is the one on the bat deterrent technology. And the changes that they want, And I would circulate this to the board in advance of the meeting, except that I'm afraid that that would violate the Sunshine Law. And so that's why I don't do it. But I disagree with the first change that they want, that the rate of take of Opeapea exceeds the applicant's projected rate of take. I think that if it's going to be effective in we don't just give the projected rate of take as something we assume is going to happen. If there's a way to reduce that in a reasonably reliable and cost-effective way, then we should require that it be done. So I would not accept, and so what they have in red is their proposed changes, so I would not accept that. The May, I understand, and I would accept that because it talks about there being consultation with the applicant and the ESRC, and which plays an important role in this. And then I would prefer to keep the next, what they've crossed out in red here, which says, without limitation on other means of determining whether the cost is reasonable, it shall be presumptively be considered reasonable if the cost per bat expected to be saved does not exceed the per bat mitigation cost. And basically, the DOFAR has been working with a per bat mitigation cost of $50,000, roughly, that you have to provide $50,000 in habitat improvement for the expected take of bat. And I think that's, you know, if you could, if you have a, if the science says you could save a bat using deterrent for $50,000, I'd be for saving it first rather than mitigating it. So my suggestion, I think this is another one where we first should approve, make a motion on the EIS, and then, but when we get to the when we get to the habitat conservation plan and incidental take license, I would like to amend the staff recommendation to add 5, and then 6 is just a bit of legalese.
So 5, you're going to propose to change your shell to may, but leave the
yes, rest of, from what
so
I've written.
Can I just try to repeat what I think you're getting at, just in my own okay. plain language? So based on discussions we've had with previous projects, when you've made the same point. So I think your point is, number one, bat deterrent is showing promise, and we want to use it if it's really showing to be effective. And you're not there yet because you haven't had any bat take in 4 years. But if you have, you know, if you have bat take, then we want to encourage that tool. And the other is that we want to make sure that just because you have an accepted rate of take, that's not a given. That, you know, we're going to use every effort to minimize the take, which is why you're encouraging bat deterrence.
Exactly.
So I think my question would be that because adaptive management is a really important principle for, I think both the agencies, and this is not just true in Hawaii, it's true, as you know, federal and other states, and also for proponents. So I guess, you know, if the two questions I would have, for the Oahu language, the 50,000 was included here. And it's
we're not saying it because that could change, but that is the figure that's been used now.
Right. So I guess there's just a couple of outstanding challenges that we have, and if you could, I'd appreciate you bearing with me on this. Is just because the take is zero now, the trigger is unclear for this. So, you know, maybe if you're not comfortable with this language that I've added here, if perhaps we could add the language in the paragraph above that says through adaptive management.
I'm fine with a clause that says through adaptive management.
Okay.
But it should be clear that what is the I don't have the thought. Your projected rate of take is like 2 a year for the next period of time, or is it?
Yeah, I think that's about right. The challenge, though, in the context with this, I mean, if you are willing to add the adaptive management language, and then, you know, if you're not comfortable with what I've added with the rate of take language.
Well, I'm comfortable with adding after the second time the word DOFA appears, mm-hmm. comma, through adaptive management,
okay.
comma, may require applicant to implement the technology.
Okay.
And it's, but the basic concept is that if we have a good way to minimize the take of bats, even if you have not exceeded your expected 2 baths a year, we should try to implement this. Now,
absolutely.
Hopefully, you never get there. If you have, you know, one, hopefully we never get there. But my interest, I really do think that we have to make it clear that all the wind farms, if we have a way that works and reduces how many bats get killed, even if they have a habitat conservation plan and they're operating within that and they're not exceeding that, if we can cut back on the number that get killed and it's at a reasonable cost, we should do it.
Okay, so, all right, I think we're clear on that.
So, my only comment would be, we do have an adaptive management plan. Minimization is the gold standard. We'd rather not kill them than have to make them. But we do have an adaptive management plan that did work with through low wind speed curtailment. So are you okay, regardless, if wind speed curtailment worked, is that okay? Or are
sure.
you preferential to... Well, I'm just afraid this will force
He's giving you the option. It's may require. Yeah. So you're, you would be your judgment call on what's the, you know, if you start to have some CSIM take, whether, you know, the way it's set up in the...
But we do have a plan that has shim promise at this site with low wind speed curtailment, so that might be the first thing to try, you know, so does that keep that alive in the plan?
Well, right, so, you might, if they start having take of bats, you might look at, well, okay, we're going to increase the cut-in speed from 5.5 meters a second to 6.5 meters a second. You might try that first before you try the deterrence. That's a scientific judgment. I'm not going to sit here
and make that judgment. I should have said this at the beginning. So our plan, the amended HCP, also includes deterrence. So DOFA presently within that HCP has the discretion to require us to put deterrence on already. So that's in that's on page 134.
Oh, well, let me look at that.
Yeah. So, and just to be clear, like we're corporately very much in favor of deterrence. It's just the challenge with this site is again.
What are you deterring?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Okay. Page 134 of, I don't see it, of the Habitat Conservation Plan?
The amended. I apologize, I think it's on 135. Sorry, it's on 135.
135, yep. Okay.
The section starts on the bottom of 134.
Measures to protect existing settlement. The header says measures to protect existing native species and their other habitats. Is that what you're referring to?
This is section 6.7.5.3.
6.7, okay, let me look for that.
5.3.
My pages are not
following
your pages.
It's pages of the document versus pages of the PDF.
It's, try page 130.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was looking at the pages of the document.
Sorry.
Okay.
It just occurred to me, I thought that might be looking at the...
Yes, I was.
Redline version. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, item 3 on page 131 speaks of implementing deterrence.
Yeah.
And as you can see too, I mean, DOFA, I know you know this, they have a lot of other items in their toolbox in that list of minimization measures that they can require.
So there's still, I think, if I can speak for Chris, the issue of if you have BET take, even if you haven't gotten to your projected rate of take, if BET deterrence looks effective, we want to go ahead and use it. That's, I think that's what he's trying to get at. Which is stronger than that language there, intentionally.
Yeah.
I'd be in support of that condition, including the rate of without the rate of take exceeding the applicant's projected rate, because of the insertion of may in the DOFA, and in addition to the clause that says after consultation with the applicant and the ESRC. So there are several different steps in
and
which
through
there'll
adaptive
be discussion
management
with both DOFA and the ESRC as you consider implementing deterrent.
Yeah.
So I think it's safe enough for the applicant. Well, as stated there.
Yeah, so I'm good with your change.
Okay.
And we will also add through adaptive management.
Right, through
well.
Adaptive management.
And I would still request that our language reflect the language that was approved for Oahu with the numeric value assigned if that without limitation sentence is left in.
Well, I'm just going to go with adding the phrase to adapt through adaptive management, and I'll read this aloud if anybody
please
wants me to. Okay, so if during the this is a condition for the incidental take license. If during the permit term, USFWS and DOFA determined that reliable scientific evidence shows that a commercially available BAT deterrent technology will be effective in reducing the take of OKAPIA at applicant site at a reasonable cost considering the expected reduction in take, DOFA, comma, through adaptive management, comma, may require applicant to implement the technology after consultation with the applicant and the ESRC. In case of a disagreement between applicant and DOFA over the implementation of this condition, the matter should be brought to the ESRC for its review and recommendation, then to the board for its final decision. And that would be special condition 4 to the incidental take license, and then an additional special condition 5 would be that special condition 4 shall be deemed severable, so that if it is deemed invalid, this shall not affect the remaining conditions or the validity of the HCP or ITL.
So are you comfortable with their deletion of this without limitation language?
I'm sorry, yes, I would want that language in there. You're right. Without limitation on the other means of determining whether the cost is reasonable, it shall be presumptively be considered reasonable if the cost per BAT expected to be taken, saved, does not exceed the per BAT mitigation cost.
Okay, and you're going to leave it at that as opposed to putting a dollar amount?
Right.
Yeah.
Okay, I guess I'm unclear why one applicant, Oahu, would have the dollar amount in their language and you would be
I don't think we did not put the dollar amount in Oahu. No.
Published.
Hmm?
I have the published.
Oh, no, you know what? You're right. You're right, we did have the dollar amount. Well, we can put the, in parentheses, we'll put 50,000 as a current amount. You are correct.
Thank you.
Okay. Okay. Okay, so Chris.
Yeah. I'm sorry, we have one other request.
Very technical, this bad stuff.
It does not exceed the remaining per BAT mitigation cost because we have already paid, we have almost completed the tier we're asking for in this amendment, we have funded $850,000 of that, $950,000 already. So it's nearly $1 million that we've already paid. So just...
Oh, I see.
Yeah. So that's the challenge.
So you've not reached tier 3 on your take, but you've funded tier 3.
We are in tier 3.
In tier 3.
We are almost in December. We will have completed all of that funding for tier 3.
I see.
And we don't expect to exceed tier 3 and go into tier 4 with our current.
Yes, all right. So, fair enough, I think. That's true.
Okay.
So you're asking that this clause would only kick in if you reach tier four?
Yes.
How many is tier three and how many is tier four?
Tier three is 11. Tier three is 19. So we're tier one and two were combined 11 total.
Yes.
Tier three is 19.
And tier four is 38?
Eight. So the total is 38. The complete one through four is a total of 38.
Oh, I see.
Yeah. So tier.
You've already funded the mitigation to go to 30?
That's right.
Okay. I see. No, I'm thinking, seriously, I'm trying to overcome my attachment to my condition here with the fact that what they have, that it may not actually be as strict as what they have already in the HCP.
The problem you're trying to solve has already been solved.
Well, right. The problem, because it's not fair to stick it in when they've mitigated, to say you start, they paid for mitigation up to 30.
Mm-hmm.
All right. But the take is only, the projected take is either 11 or 12, like, or two different numbers. But okay. So rather than say this clause kicks in only when you get to 30, which is actually weaker than the clause in the HCP, which kicks in if they start taking more bats than they get more than two, I think, in a year, observed take, then it starts to, then the potential for requiring deterrence kicks in already through the clauses that they discussed that are on section 6.7.5.3. I think that takes care of my concerns, and so I'm going to withdraw the idea of making an amendment to this.
Okay. Okay, would you like to make a motion on the... Yes.
Okay, I'll make a motion to accept the environmental impact statement.
Second.
Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Okay. You want to make another motion?
To approve the staff recommendation for C3.
And, is C3... What is
C3?
Is it the conservation? C2 is... Yes. Okay. Is there a second to that?
Second.
All in favor?
No.
Aye.
Thank you for bearing with me on that.
No, it was good.
Thank you for working so hard
on
minimization. You're obviously doing a great job with minimization. Thank you very much.
Best of luck with the continuing.
I'd like to suggest we take a short break. At least I want one.
Yeah. 10:45 break. 10:45 break.